Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
This is so important. We know that Israel has unleashed a genocidal onslaught against the people of Palestine. Now, there's another part of the story which we don't hear about enough. A fifth of the population of Israel's pre-1967 borders, that is excluding the occupied territories, are Palestinian citizens of Israel. And they're treated as third or fourth class citizens by state, which makes clear that this is a state which exists for its Jewish citizens. And they face rampant discrimination, and they also face intimidation if they speak out for their rights and the rights of the Palestinian people in general. Which brings me to the case of the renowned Palestinian feminist academic Nadira Chalhoub Kevorkian, whose work focuses on state violence, trauma, genocide. You can see why her work is so relevant right now. And her case really exposes Israel's claim to the world that it is the Middle East's only democracy. Now, those speaking out who are Jewish in Israel against the horrors in Gaza face being victimized. But for its Palestinian citizens, it is so much worse. Now, she's been arrested for comments made in a podcast and subjected to horrendous conditions. What she's been arrested for is absurd and false, incitement to terrorism, violence and racism. By a state which, you should know, allows its leaders, politicians, generals, soldiers, army officers, media outlets, journalists, private citizens to engage in rampant and obscene genocidal incitement in violation of the 1948 Genocide Convention, which Israel put on its statute books in 1950, actually made incitement to genocide a capital offence, i.e. in theory having the death penalty. And indeed also defies the provisional orders of the International Court of Justice, which ordered Israel to fulfil its legal obligations and prosecute such people. That she's the sort of person that they're arresting in Israel. Now, firstly, I'm going to play the comments she made in the podcast, which she's been attacked. And then I have two brilliant guests who know her very well and her work, who will explain what's going on, why this matters, and what you can do.
Nadira, I want to ask maybe a final question, which is, on this report that came out on the October 7th report that the UN just put out on the question of the rape and the sexual violence. Now, I want to ask you as a Palestinian feminist who's there. There's been a lot of criticism of this report, and the fact that it still, as far as I know, still relies almost entirely on Israeli official sources, with almost no actual eyewitnesses. And yet, of course, if one were to express this kind of thing, to say that on social media or anything else, one is open to attack for being against women and against, so how do you read that, and how do you compare that to the absolute silence of all the other reports and all the documented, rigorously documented reports on sexual violence, let alone violence, sexual violence towards Palestinian men and women and girls and boys?
Well, it's very telling. The way I read it as shaming the state of Israel, because they're using women's bodies, women's sexuality, and women's intimate life to play with it in political terms. Now, if rapes, abuses, sexual abuses, gang rapes, it always happened in war times. It always happened. We know of my book on militarization and violence against women covers this topic. And we know that the state of Israel, 1948, there is a report, for example, in Nirin, exactly that specific place where October 7th started, there was a case of a Bedouin woman, a Bedouin young girl that was not only, there is documentation that I managed to get from the archive, whereby Ben Gurion learned about the case, and the captain, the military officer, asked his soldiers, "What do you want to do with the Bedouin woman?" Do you want us to kill her or do you want us to rape her? And the answer was Litvokota, Litvokota, to fuck her. That was, this is something that I've written about and in my book on Unchilding, it opens up the chapter on the Naqab area. Abuses and sexual abuses happen and it shouldn't happen. And I will never approve it, not to Israelis, nor to Palestinians, and not in my name. The reports sometimes can get testimonies, some other times cannot get testimonies. The issue is that, is Israel allowing proper collection of evidence? Plus, you know, personally, as a feminist, I don't go and interrogate the rape victims. If a woman said she was raped, I will believe her. I do not need evidence, and I don't want to go check facts, to be honest. This is my opinion. The issue is that even that we don't have, we don't see women coming out and saying what happened. So women's bodies are being used as political weapons. If it happened, not in my name. If it didn't happen, it's shame on the state to use women's bodies and sexuality to promote political agendas, to promote further dispossession of land, to promote further killing, to promote abuse and rape. And you know, keep in mind that the rapability of the Palestinian based on the Zionist agenda is hard at work in so many ways. And I've, again, have written about that. And the state crime that is sexualized and genderized is there. So we need to, number one, remember this is a very dishonest to come to say the state, they will use everything to further kill. It's a killing machine and it's a necro political regime that can survive only on the erasure of Palestinians, and only when they will stop this and they will acknowledge what they're doing, we can start talking, like, but not to criminals. Criminals will should be punished at this point. So I don't know what to tell you else about, you know, when I look at the pictures, at the photos of soldiers today getting into Palestinian homes, using the lingerie, playing with it, using you and laughing and putting it on tanks and putting it on rifles. What is it? What is this if it's not sexual abuse? When you see how, the way they're treating men, undressing them, keeping them with nothing, using that, what is it if it's not sexual abuse? So using dogs, exactly like what happened in Abu Ghraib, the body of the Palestinian, the living body, the dead body, the cut to pieces body, are all capital in the hands of this Zionist entity. And of course, they will use any lie. They started with babies, they continued with rape, they will continue with a million other lies every day with another story. We stopped believing them. I hope that the world will stop believing them. And if things like this happen, not in my name, I will never approve it.
Now, with that context, I'm really delighted to be joined by two brilliant guests at UCLA, which is obviously University of California, Los Angeles, for those who don't know. That's Shireen Razack, who is a distinguished professor in the Penny Kanner Endowed Chair in Women's Studies at the Department of Gender Studies at UCLA, who's at the encampment, encampments in support of the solidarity with the Palestinian people, calling for divestment by universities in Israel, have sprung up across the United States and suffered a brutal clampdown by the police, which we've been covering, as well as Sari Magdisi, literary critic and English literature professor at UCLA. Hello to you both. I'm going to start with you, Shireen, if that's okay. A very much sunnier looking place than poor old London. And you're at that encampment. Could you just tell us a bit? I just gave a bit of context there, but could you tell us more about Nadira?
I can tell you about her scholarship and about her personally, but let me start with her scholarship. What mm-hmm. she is absolutely known for is scholarship that crosses a number of fields, and that's very significant. It's law, it's criminology, it's social work, it's feminist studies, and her scholarship on feminist studies is particularly salient right now because she has been for 25 years an analyst of sexual violence, of gender violence, of colonial violence, and understanding how all of these things are related, which makes her very important at this moment, but it also makes her a target for the Israeli state, who is wanting to advance that that it is the only feminist voice, ironically, on these matters.
Sari, do you want to just say a bit as well about just her scholarship and how important her work is?
Her work is foundational for anybody who wants to have an understanding of, for example, the surveillance mechanisms of the Israeli state, circumstances of occupation and discrimination in the Israeli state. One of her most important projects is what she calls the unchilding of Palestinian children at the hands of the Israeli state. That is literally the stripping away of the childhood of Palestinian children. For example, children in the West Bank can be arrested and you know, put in jail without charge for months on end on what's called administrative detention. Obviously, what we've been seeing for the past 7 months in Gaza is the large-scale slaughter of Palestinian children and their abuse and so on. So the Nadira's concepts are absolutely essential to a critical understanding of what the Israeli state does and how the Israeli state operates and so forth. So, I mean, I could say much more than that, but just as a snapshot, that's part of why her work is so indispensable.
So, Israel often describes itself, as we know, without just making people die of eye rolling, as the only democracy in the Middle East. That's how it often likes to style itself. I'm just wondering, in terms of the basis, the justification for what she's been subjected to, and we've heard her lawyer spoken out about the terrible conditions in which she's being held. Just either of you, I don't know who wants to kick off, but in terms of what the basis, the justification for this, and what this represents. Who wants to go? Sorry?
Shireen, go ahead.
Yes. First of all, to say the basis for the justification, nothing has to make sense here. This is a bit of a title of my book, but really it's the genuine point. The justifications don't make any sense. So it's hard to find the basis. But we do know that there is, first of all, there's been this obsession with saying that Nadira Shalhoub Kevorkian supports Hamas raping Israeli women. I mean, that's been one of the bases for it. And you know, it has directly sort of invoked the idea that she is not a feminist. She does not accept that Hamas raped women, etc. When in fact, you know, she has quite clearly declared that this kind of violence can never be in her name. So that's one of the bases that I can make out. The other is simply the allegation that she is not being truthful when she talks about the enormous violence directed, for example, at Palestinian children. And her very careful scholarship showing that children are political capital for the Israeli state, killing them is important. These are messages that must be disavowed.
I mean, just on that, I mean, again, I just want to add just a bit more context for people who don't know. I mean, she's in her 60s. She was strip searched, handcuffed so tightly it caused pain, denied access to food, water, medication for several hours, held in a cold cell I'm just reading from the Guardian's report here, without adequate clothing or blankets, as well as conditions in Israeli prisons have deteriorated. They're under the control of one of the even more extreme elements of a very extreme government who's relished making those prison conditions worse. I think it's also important just to note, in terms of that, because we're talking about kids there, is Save the Children, months before the 7th of October, did a detailed report about child detainees and reported that those children were subjected not just to physical abuse but also to sexual abuse as well, that has not received coverage in almost any Western media outlet. And I just think that just shows the importance of her work and what she's speaking about, but the evidential basis for it, because the likes of Save the Children obviously have spoken about that. I mean, really, sorry, it's, I mean, because she's spoken out about, she's described this as genocide, hasn't she? And to use her platform to talk about genocide, as far as the Israeli authorities are concerned, that's really what this is really largely about, isn't it?
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I mean, it's certainly partly about that. But of course, there are other people talking about the Israeli genocide in Gaza, including the International Court of Justice in The Hague, and innumerable legal scholars, among whom her company can be counted. So there's no doubt that's what's going on, and there's no doubt that that's part of what's going on in the background here. But I mean, as Shireen is saying, her work on children, specifically in the instance of Gaza, children, becomes absolutely pivotal here. So, and her work, there's her academic work, as I said, but her employer has been going after her since October because of what she's been saying about the catastrophe that Israel is inflicting and imposing on Gaza. Yeah. But the podcast that I co-host with my brothers, the Maqdisi Street podcast, also came up when she was arrested because of the suggestion that she said that she denied what happened on October 7th, and that she engaged in incitement to violence also. And the good thing about that is that the podcast is out there. Our recording with her is available for anybody to see. It's available anywhere. And you can see it's one of the most powerful podcast episodes we produced, precisely because Nadira brings to bear her brilliant apparatus of scholarship and theoretical investigation and of course cumulative knowledge onto the question of the treatment of children, Palestinian bodies, Palestinian families, and so forth in Gaza. So, at least in that podcast episode in particular, since I know it because I was there and I witnessed it.
What I think is really striking is we're seeing, obviously, she's a Palestinian citizen of Israel, very distinguished academic, as you've detailed, being prosecuted for incitement, rhetoric, all the rest of it. What we've seen in Israel since 7th of October is genocidal mania. I interviewed Raz Sigal, who I know you know, the Israeli-American associate professor of genocide and Holocaust studies. He says intent is so rarely overtly spoken as it has been in this particular case. The 1948 Genocide Convention legally prohibits incitement to genocide. Israel actually put that in its own law, as it was obliged to do as a signatory. It actually, in Israel, carries the death penalty in theory, incitement to genocide. And the ITJ, the International Court of Justice, in its provisional orders, ordered Israel to prosecute those who incite genocide. They didn't do that, not one of them. So you see all media figures, politicians, generals, soldiers engaging in rampant genocidal incitement whilst carrying out genocide, I would argue. And then you see a Palestinian citizen of Israel, she gets prosecuted. What do you think that tells us?
Well, it first of all tells us that Israel does not obey international law, but it also tells us that there is a necessity to go after the intellectuals and the academics because, in fact, the incitement to genocide has come from the very top levels of Israeli society. It has come from the prime minister. It has come from the various ministers. So, you have to do something to deflect attention to that. And I think this is what this does is draw attention to the intellectuals and the academics. But it does seem to me to be a particularly sort of ill-advised move. What is this? Clamp down on this very well-regarded scholar and scholarship? Is that going to be somehow in your interest? This is what I can't get over.
Sorry, what about your thoughts about that?
I mean, it is remarkable that not only have the Israelis refused to prosecute anybody who among their leaders, from the president to the prime minister, all the way down to common foot soldiers, not only have they refused to prosecute them for genocide or even interrogate them or stop them for incitement to genocide, they are continuing to engage in these acts of incitement. So that a state that is engaged in what the International Court of Justice found plausibly to be genocidal acts And that, as you just said, the court, you know, demanded that the Israelis suspend their genocidal actions and above all stop inciting further genocide. That this state is now turning to a brilliant scholar and saying she's the one who's inciting the genocide. It's something. I mean, you know, to talk about, you know, Kafka or Jonathan Swift or somebody like that, that doesn't even do the justice to the extent to which we have left, we have departed, you know, we've left the terra firma of reality far behind, and we're in this other sort of alternate universe in a way. And that's where this kind of absurdity takes us. It's mind-boggling.
It is Kafkaesque, I think is a very good way of putting it. Yeah. Just finally then, what can people do? Because obviously this is a huge injustice. I mean, there's lots of, horrific injustices taking place at the moment, but this is really important. It's important people speak out and show their solidarity. What's your, in terms of people listening to this, what's your suggestions?
I think that they should, first of all, in the specific case of Nadira, they should inform herself about her work. Go read her work. Go see what she's saying. Listen to our podcast. Read her journals, articles. Read her other, you know, interventions in print. They're all over the place. She's a major author and a major scholar. It's very easy to get a hold of her work. And then beyond that, to inform themselves as to what the Israelis are doing in Gaza, and above all, the nature of the Israeli state and the forms of discrimination, racial discrimination, that it practices internally, of which this is one instance. But that's kind of the amazing thing, is the Israelis are giving the world an instance of the forms of racial discrimination that they practice consistently. Their educational system is rife with forms of racial discrimination against Palestinians, just to say, from their standpoint, non-Jewish citizens of the state, that begins before kindergarten, goes all through the entire school system, which is, by the way, split between Jewish and non-Jewish citizens. They have different educational systems entirely that are segregated according to that foundation. Right. And then on into the university system. Now that Palestinians are renowned among in the Arab world as being among the most highly educated, along with the Lebanese. I mean, the numbers of percentages of Palestinians with university degrees, with PhDs and so forth, is far in excess of the normal kind of standard. And yet, if you look at the Israeli state, of whom 20% of the population of the state within its pre-67 borders are Palestinian citizens, you'll find that as you go up each rung of the Israeli academic system, the percentage of Palestinian participation declines. Not because Palestinians are not educated, but because of the forms of racial discrimination. And again, what's happening to Nadira is an expression directly of that. And that's what we have to think about, rather than the absurdity, as you're saying, that, you know, the Kafkaesque or Gidesque or whatever absurdity of these trumped up charges to which she's being subjected.
And just final word to you, Trini. And also, if you could tell us as well about the encampment finally afterwards, because I know you're these wonderful encampments, people, you know, both faculty and students turning out. But yeah, your final thoughts on this, and then maybe on a final flourish, you could tell us about the encampment. Go for it. Yeah. So, Shireen, it's just to ask you about both about your thoughts, just in terms of what people could do, but also if you could just tell us a bit about the encampment.
Okay. Well, first, I just want to say that in reference to Sari's point about why they're going after Nadira and what people could do is inform themselves about her work, I want to think about the fact that after you've destroyed every single university and every school, and you killed a number of educators, prominent educators, and you killed more than 10,000 children, I wonder if we must connect what is happening to Nadira to that, because this is in effect continuing to kill the in one way or another, to silence, to kill, to persecute, torment, harass Palestinian speakers, in fact, anyone who is speaking out about this genocide. So we must connect it to the material reality of all this death and persecution that has gone on. So I really want to emphasize that. And I could bring that right back to the encampment. The encampment is made up of hundreds of students and tremendous faculty support who are all finding it absolutely critical to speak out about this genocide and to do things that will stop it, anything to stop it, to call for divestment, to do all of these things. That's what this encampment is about. And I have to tell you, it is remarkably well organized. The students are so terrific about this, so careful. It is a very peaceful encampment out here at UCLA.
Well, it's very heartening, I have to say. And I think this really has been a formative experience for people in the global north across the world. They're watching the obscenity of what the Israeli state is unleashing against the Palestinian people, but they're also seeing the brutality of the repression, the attempt to silence those who are speaking out. I think the intensity of it is because they're losing. They're losing quite badly, actually. And I think you can see that they've lost hearts and minds in a really catastrophic way, is only heading in one direction. And they can try and, in this case, lock people up. They can arrest people. They can intimidate them. They can deplatform people, threaten their careers, all the rest. But I think people have seen too much that they can't unsee. And I think the courage, and we've just spoken about someone's incredible courage, that just inspires other people to speak out. I don't think it's having the impact they hope. And I think that's the most important lesson we draw from this, that we don't feel scared and frightened by these examples. We use them to speak even louder. That's the least we can do. So thank you both very much to all of you. If you're watching, obviously, do subscribe, press like, leave a comment, let's hear your thoughts. Do share this video, get the message out. Let's make sure everyone knows all about this. And a very special thanks to both my guests. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.